Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 10 of the Mrs. Feminist Podcast. I hope you had a wonderful week. It was a very eventful week, and something this week happened that is really, really important, and finally, a small tidbit of justice was served, and that is what we're going to be talking about today. Okay. Let's start by giving a big congratulations to California. You, California, have successfully voted out Aaron Persky, the terrible judge responsible for the worst sentencing ever during the Brock Turner case. So this is the first time in 86 years that a judge has been successfully recalled, with 59% of the voters demanding he be removed from a position of power. So congratulations, that is huge. When I saw this news pop up on my phone, I was so overwhelmed with relief. Finally, it felt like this case had been given a fraction of the justice it deserved. Melissa Kirtley from the Independent newspaper wrote a fantastic piece in reaction to this news. I'll link it in my newsletter, which you can sign up for on my website, and I will also put it in the bio here for you guys to read. She said this, "We just witnessed a huge moment in history. Last night, the people of Santa Clara County, California, voted to recall Judge Aaron Persky. This result is an enormous victory for women's rights, victims of sexual assault, and American democracy. By recalling Persky, we're sending a message that the fight to recall rape culture is real and that people will not be ignored." Because this is so monumental, I want to go over the case that is the reason why Persky has been recalled. It's also a really strong example of why rape culture is still a thing and how women's rights are still being undermined so that privileged men can continue to live their life without repercussions. So we're going to go over this case. It's really interesting. I want to say that this episode needs a major trigger warning. I'm going to be discussing a case that was about rape. I'll be going over details of the case and also reading some of the survivor statements. If any of that could potentially be traumatizing for you or put you in a situation where you're taking back to something that's happened in your own life or that you were involved with, please turn this off. Go watch puppy videos or something that makes you happy and don't listen any further. I'm not going to go into big gory details, but regardless, you need to know that this story is so much more than, oh, a woman got raped and the rapist got away with it. There's a lot that happened because of this trial and within this trial and following this trial. So we're going to be discussing a lot. So if you think you kind of know what happened, keep listening because you might learn some other important things that are good to know. All right, here we go. On January 18th, 2015, Jane Doe, the woman who survived Brock Turner's attack, went to a party at Stanford University with her younger sister, a student there. By the way, Jane Doe is used to name this woman since laws require that the names of victims of sexual assault are not released to the public just for confidentiality reasons. This is really important in protecting the survivors of these assaults, so we fully support this. So I'm just going to call her Jane from here on out, just so you guys know. So Jane was able to read a statement during the trial that she wrote. It is really, really powerful. I will also link it. I highly recommend you read it. It is really beautiful and heartbreaking all at once, and such an important, valuable piece of literature now that we need to be conscious of, and that is important to read because it sheds light on this very important topic. So in her statement, here's her account of what happened when she went to that party. So she says this, "My sister teased me for wearing a beige cardigan to a frat party like a librarian. I made silly faces, let my guard down, and drank liquor too fast, not factoring in that my tolerance had significantly lowered since college. The next scene I remember, I was in a gurney in a hallway. I had dried blood and bandages on the backs of my hands and my elbow. Brock Turner claimed that he had flirted with Jane. The two had left the party holding hands, they shared a beer together, and then they engaged in consensual activity. Brock Turner then claims that he felt nauseous from the beer, so he went to throw up, and that's when he was accosted by two men. So I just want to make it really clear, Brock Turner's side of what happened has been 100% debunked and proven to be total BS. It's a 100% lie. It was just his way of twisting his disgusting act into something legal in a desperate attempt to save himself from conviction. So don't believe a single word he said in that statement. Here's what actually happened, as detailed in the People vs. Turner case. So two Swedish graduate students, Peter Lars Johnson and Carl Fredrik Arndt, were cycling by the Kappa Alpha fraternity on the Stanford campus at about 1 a.m. on January 18, 2015, when they spotted an assault taking place. They saw a man thrusting into a half-naked, unconscious girl behind a dumpster. Johnson testified in court later on that he confronted the man, asking Brock Turner, "What the F are you doing? She's unconscious." According to Johnson, Brock Turner quickly rose and fled. As Arndt momentarily checked to determine whether the girl was breathing, Johnson chased Brock Turner, tripped him, and while holding him down about 75 feet from the dumpster, Brock Turner began laughing. Johnson asked him, "What are you smiling for?" Later, responding to the assistant district attorney's questions during the trial, Brock Turner testified that he was laughing because he found the situation, quote, ridiculous. So following Johnson pinning him down, Arndt rapidly joined the chase, helping to pin Brock Turner down when he was apprehended. A bystander at the dumpster called emergency services. Meanwhile, two other passerbys arrived to aid Arndt and Johnson in holding the assailant. Campus police arrived moments later, questioned Brock Turner, and then arrested him. He was arrested and booked in the local county jail under attempted rape and penetration of a foreign object. Turner was released that same day after making bail for $150,000. So a little bit of background about Brock Turner. Brock Turner is from a really affluent family. He is a three-time All-American swimmer who likely would have gone on to compete in the Olympics. However, he does have a pattern of abusing alcohol and drugs, of which he was convicted previously for underage possession. At the time of his arrest, he was a 19-year-old freshman at Stanford University on a scholarship for swimming. This became a really big focus of the case, that this poor, promising athlete was going to have his future destroyed, as if all of that matters after you brutally assault someone. Newsflash! Your choices and actions have consequences. Oh, it's crazy. So following the arrest, Turner withdrew from Stanford to face disciplinary proceedings. 2 days after his arrest, Stanford announced Turner was banned from campus, and 2 weeks following the incident, Stanford announced it had banned Brock Turner from ever setting foot on campus again. And that is the harshest disciplinary sanction it can impose on a student. So Stanford was like, "Bye, bitch. Don't even try to come back." The USA Official Swimming Council, or I don't know exactly what it is, but the people in charge of every swim that goes on in the States, they stated in June that Brock Turner would not be eligible for membership if he sought to reapply for it. And on June 10th, they again reiterated that Turner would never be welcome in its ranks again under its zero tolerance policy for sexual misconduct. That announcement effectively banned Turner from ever participating in a competitive swimming event in the United States ever again, which means that his Olympic dream was dead, and the Olympics are frankly better for it. So the trial for this entire case came about a year later, and to say it was a mess is an understatement. Brock Turner's main defense was this. Brock Turner is nothing but a sad result of the party culture on campus, and now he's being blamed for something he never did just because Jane Doe thinks she may have been assaulted even though she was blackout drunk, bluesy. It's not fair that Brock Turner is having to deal with this since he's a promising student athlete and you guys are ruining his future over nothing. So in case you think I'm being dramatic, know this. When headlines initially broke out on this case, they would say things like, promising student athlete tarnished due to an alleged assault, instead of saying, disgusting rapist Brock Turner held responsible for forever hurting Jane Doe in malicious assault. In an article from March 31st, 2016, the New York Post headline was, three-time All-American Stanford swimmer found guilty of sexual assault. Guess what, you guys? His lame swimming career actually has zero relevance, so don't soften the blow by making it some sad tale of a man whose future has been ruined. I feel like breaking out into that song from the movie Chicago, where they're like, he had it coming, he had it coming, he only had himself to blame. If someone were to ever make a documentary about this, I would pay them every penny I have to use that song as the background music whenever Brock Turner comes on the screen. It would be incredible. Brock Turner's dad wrote a plea to Judge Aaron Persky once it was clear that the jury was not buying any of his bullshit. And I have to say, it's the most pathetic thing I've ever read. So here's some of what he had to say after detailing his son's many athletic and academic successes, because those are so relevant. Okay, he wrote this. As it stands now, Brock's life has been deeply altered forever by the events of January 17th and 18th. He will never be his happy-go-lucky self with that easygoing personality and welcoming smile. His every waking minute is consumed with worry, anxiety, fear, and depression. You can see this in his face, the way he walks, his weakened voice, his lack of appetite. Brock always enjoyed certain types of food and is a very good cook. I was always excited to buy him a big ribeye steak to grill or to get his favorite snack for him, and now he barely consumes any food and eats only to exist. These verdicts have broken and shattered him and our family in so many ways. His life will never be the one that he dreamed about and worked so hard to achieve. That is a steep price to pay for 20 minutes of action out of his 20 plus years of life. The fact that he now has to register as a sexual offender for the rest of his life forever alters where he can live, visit, work, and how he will be able to interact with people and organizations. Brock can do so many positive things as a contributor to society and is totally committed to educating other college-age students about the dangers of alcohol consumption and sexual promiscuity. I'm sorry that your son is a POS, and it sucks that you have to live with that, and I'm sorry that he's sad and not eating a steak with a smile anymore, but that's the price he has to pay. He isn't the victim because he has a lack of self-control. I get being a parent, and it probably sucks to see your young child make this terrible, terrible, terrible life decision, and now you have to deal with it, and you're trying to clean up his mess because you don't want him to have to live with it the rest of his life. And like, obviously you're always gonna love your kid and want the best for them, and that's totally normal, and I 100% believe that people deserve a second chance, but don't go into court and try to make this sad plea. Your son is going to have to deal with the consequences of his actions, and the best thing you can do as a parent is say, you know what, I love you, you're going to get through this, we're going to do everything we can to make you a positive contributor to society after all this is said and done, because obviously you're not doing a good job of it right now, but you have to face up. So, after all of the evidence was shared in court, the jury agreed without hesitation that Brock Turner was guilty. They found Brock Turner guilty of 3 felony counts of sexual assault, which meant Turner was up for potentially 14 years in jail. And that, if he had served 14 years in jail, that still would never make what he did okay and would never even begin to make up for it, but at least it would be something. But instead of justice being served, Judge Aaron Persky sentenced Brock Turner to a measly 6 months in county jail and 3 years of probation. Persky said he only sentenced him to 6 months in jail because anything more than that would significantly affect him. As if that matters. Guess who has to live with this for the rest of her life, let alone 6 months in some country club jail? Jane Doe. This, by the way, is not the only time that a-hole Aaron Persky has totally botched sentencing someone, particularly when they are a rich white male. And that is not a stereotype or a dramatization. He has a distinct history of being more lenient depending on your class and your race. Kirkley, from that independent article I mentioned earlier, writes, Persky did not just mishandle the 2016 Brock Turner case. Persky has a pattern of making bad decisions that protect dangerous men, especially athletes. More than once, he customized football player sentences around their game schedules as not to hurt their careers after they were found guilty of sexual assault, domestic violence, and other violent crimes against women. Persky also gave a man convicted of child pornography just 4 days in jail, even though he possessed dozens of disgusting photos, including ones of a baby being assaulted. In one domestic violence case in which Persky accepted the defendant's plea deal of a few days in weekend jail, his victim asked the court, "So when I get beaten, can I ask for a better offer? Can I ask for a discount beating?" Here's the issue with Brock Turner's sentence. When we fail to hand down punishments appropriate to the crime, we perpetuate this idea that even though you may be doing something illegal, you can get away with it and no one cares. This sent a message to rapists everywhere that if you get caught, it's not a huge deal because you'll only have to do 6 months in jail, and that's nothing in the grand scheme of things. After all of this, Brock Turner was released from jail after only serving just 3 months due to good behavior. Then, when Brock Turner went to register as a sex offender, he registered as a citizen of Ohio as opposed to California, and this meant that his sex offender status only lasts 15 years compared to in California, where it would last for the rest of his life. You guys, this is so wrong. In March of this year, Brock Turner had the balls to try to appeal his sex offender status. And, like, this story just goes on and on and on. So Turner's attorney argued that his client was deprived of due process, a fair trial, and his right to present a defense when the judge restricted testimony from 4 individuals with Dayton area ties: Turner's friend, an ex-girlfriend, and 2 swim coaches. This time, the court was not having it. They were like, "Listen, your coaches and girlfriend's nice feelings about you are irrelevant." Then Brock Turner's lawyer claimed that prosecutors malevolently used the phrase "behind the dumpster" to describe the location of the incident because it implied Turner wanted to shield the incident from view, which he did, because it implied moral depravity, callousness, and culpability on the applicant's part. The court said Turner literally called it a dumpster, STFU. So I'm paraphrasing, of course. Anyways, the appeal failed, thankfully, because the state was like, "You're stupid, he had his chance, he was convicted, stop bothering us." So at least that was something. And then finally today, Californians were like, "You know what, Aaron Persky, judge of Turner's case? You made a bad call, you have a history of making bad calls, and we are 100% over it. So guess what? Now you don't get to make any calls." I don't think there is ever a situation where it's going to feel like justice was fully actualized. How could you ever put a number of days in jail or a number of fines to pay or number of years to be registered as a sex offender? How could you ever make any of that somehow make what happened feel better. You know, that just doesn't happen. At the end of the day, it's always going to be a terrible situation. Justice will never feel fully served, but the most important thing, like I said earlier, is that even though nothing could ever make what happened better, we still have to give something. We have to do something to make a deterrent, because clearly some people are not smart enough to not do this in the first place. I was going to read some of the statements that Jane Doe said in her letter to the court, because they are really powerful, but they're not my words to share. So I'm putting the link in the bio for the description for this episode. It's going to be on website. I'll put it on social media. It's a link to a BuzzFeed article that kind of goes over the case super briefly in like a paragraph at the start. And then it also goes into her full statement. And what I do want to share with you guys is that she shared this in front of Aaron Persky. And most importantly, she shared this while looking directly into the eyes of Brock Turner. And I can't imagine the amount of courage that would take, but I'm so proud of her for doing that and for speaking her truth, because so often we don't get to hear the other side of the story from the person it happened to, and they don't get a chance to share, hey, this is exactly what you did to me, and this is exactly how it's affecting me, and I'm never going to be the same, and it's because of you. So I hope that for all 3 months that Brock Turner sat in that county jail, I hope those words were just on repeat in his head. And I really, really do hope that he has learned from this. I hope he has understood that what he did was wrong. It was 100% wrong. It wasn't the alcohol's fault. Wasn't sexual feelings fault. It was his fault, and I hope he knows that to the very core of his being, and I hope it does rock his little world. I do believe that people deserve second chances, and they do deserve the chance to rehabilitate and to make something of their life and change it around, and so I really hope he does that. If you've gone through anything similar to she has, you need to know that there are so many resources out there for you. You can reach out to your local victims assistance unit with the police force. Reach out to trusted family members and friends. Go get counseling. It makes a big difference. Know that you are supported and you are believed and that you are valuable and you are loved and you are not a victim of this. You are a survivor and you deserve happiness and love and to be treated with respect and to be heard. I'd encourage you guys all in response to this to read up on the whole concept of rape culture. We're going to do another episode on it, but this is such a powerful example of how, as a society, we continue to make this disgusting behavior the norm, and we continue to make it acceptable, and we don't punish it or treat it with the severity it requires. So we'll talk about that later, but do some research. Definitely read Jane's statement. It is powerful, like I said. And rate this podcast, review, subscribe, do your thing, and have a great rest of your week. Thanks, guys. Bye.